communication. You've noted that in terms of the proclamation last year, digital migration policy is now with communication with TPS. But majority of the entities that are responsible for digital migration remain with us. So what we are trying to do is to synchronize a discussion on digital migration and digital instrument. I've already written to Honorable Mune Moropa. What she has given me as a proposal is the 10th of March for us to have the discussion. And in terms of our program members, that's why I'm putting it here so that if we agree, it means what we have in terms of our program, we've got briefing by NEMISA on update status and briefing by BVI. So if those two items are to fall off, it means we'll have to prioritize them the first week when we come back after recess, because if you look at the program, we would not have another time to deal with that. So it's those two, and including the discussion on ICT policy review. And I've received your comments on the question. I think for me to be able to work with that and incorporate, I think we are going to need a more time discussion with ICT policy review, all policy discussions in the beginning. So I'm proposing members that on the 10th, we move into a joint sitting with communication, if that's members are fine with that, because that's the date that Honorable Mulumurupa has given me. So that's what I'm presenting, Honorable Members. With the oversight visit, we have identified three provinces. It doesn't necessarily mean that we go to the three provinces. But what's happening is that we've written to all the entities to say to them, now, give us each, in terms of an institution, give us a project that you have in the particular three provinces, the cost or budget of it, beneficiaries, I'm trying to remember what I've written, and the implication or the impact of the program in these three provinces so that we can finalize. We'll look at them. Some of the issues we already know from where I'm sitting. I've been going through some of the documents based on the annual report and all that to pull out. In case we don't have, we've given them the deadline of this week, this week Friday. Once we get that, we'll be able to circulate a detailed program proposing to all members to say this is what we're going to do with our oversight visit. It is going to be definitely full out. I'm hoping that the parliament program becomes stable and that we have to do more on oversight. We are lacking on that. We've done one oversight so far, and I really feel that we're lagging behind, and we really have to try and catch up and see some of the things, because it makes it more easier to discuss when we've seen the impact on the ground. So that's the proposal, Honorable Members, in terms of the program. I'm open for comments and questions. Honorable Shin.
Chair, thank you. I'm pleased that you're going to try to arrange the joint sitting on DGT, because it's ridiculous that the entities that actually should be responsible for rolling it out don't come before us. So I would welcome that, and I hope that does happen. I'd also then like to make a suggestion for next week as well, because the Communications Committee, Joe Madwaha, is talking on the ICT policy review, which has nothing to do with communications. They've got their own policy review, and from the notes I got from them, he's on next week. So, he should be reporting to us next week, not to communications. So if we could perhaps work that one as well, that I think would be beneficial. Because otherwise, we've had a very insubstantial program this year. Apart from dealing with the SEPA, we've actually done very little of substance because of all the chopping and changing and turf wars and goodness knows what else. So if we can work those two, that would be great. It would mean that we've got some meat to deal with this year. Thank you.
Just quickly on that one, I think with the proposal of the 10th, I had to wait for the committee. It's agreed. We're going to have. I'd like to address the issue of ICT because they have no policy mandate or no mandate as the committee. I'll work out with the House Chairperson on that one because it's not supposed to happen. That's just simple like that. I'll work out with the House Chairperson and bring it to his attention. I'm not so sure why the department as well would allow it to happen.
The problem is that the man who led the policy review is now employed at the Department of Communications. He's probably the expert, but he's now reporting back to the wrong department.
Okay.
So members, shall we adopt the program with those changes? On the 10th is that we are having a joint meeting with communication on ETT. That's the change. And then we will come back later with policy review, just once, and together with the NEMISA and BBI. I do need us to have a discussion with government in FACO. There's been reports of some difficulties they're facing, and I wouldn't want us to reach a process of budget without having to discuss with them. There's been some concerns that we seem to be neglecting them as well. So we definitely have, they need to come and explain their situation to the committee. So we'll definitely come back to those. I think we'll work out in terms of the program. We'll start making with the team. Thanks, members. Shall we move to the next item? Support team led by Dr. Simon Shaba. Welcome, and thank you for making time to engage with us. I'm not going to, Dr. Lushaba, I know it's your first time coming to our committee. I don't know if the colleagues have briefed you. I normally don't introduce people even if I have my list in front of me. I allow people to introduce themselves. And you are also not allowed to introduce them. They must introduce themselves. So they must start telling us their names and savings, and also their responsibility relating to the institution. With those few words, welcome. We're looking forward to the engagement, and over to you. You can take us through.
Chairperson and members of the Portfolio of Committee, thank you very much once again for giving us the opportunity to come through and make this presentation. And as the Chair has indicated, we will start with introductions. My name is Andrew Nongoba. I'm currently acting head of Mail Business.
Good morning, my name is Vinny Kamja. I'm management, General Manager of Management Accounting at SAPO.
Good morning, honorable members. My name is Lo Matonzi, Chief Operating Officer and Acting Group Chief Executive Officer. And thank you very much for having us here and affording me the first opportunity to come to Parliament. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, members of the committee. We are very grateful to have this opportunity to come and do this presentation to you. We hope it's the first of a few others that are going to follow as we progress. I'm going to do the introductory remarks after we finish the introductions. My name is Simo Lushaba. I'm the administrator of the post office. Thank you.
Good morning, honorable members. My name is Shane Adam. I'm the acting MD of Postbank.
Morning, Chair, honorable members. My name is Prince Kembikile Xipho. I'm the group executive, public affairs.
Good morning, members. My name is Rhoda. I'm responsible for government and parliamentary relations. Thank you.
My apologies. I made an omission. There's a letter that I needed to have circulated to members, but I'll definitely do that today. Minister has written to me informing the committee that he has decided to extend the term of the administrator with 3 months so that members are aware. My apologies. I thought I would have emailed it first thing in the morning so that by the time we get here, or circulated. I'll try and get my secretary to print those letters. It's just one page letter. So that all members have that, just to inform you that the minister has written to inform us of the extension, 3 months of the administrator. I thought let me just get that out of the way before we start. And yeah, I had hoped that the DM would be here. We tried speaking. They are meeting the Auditor General this morning, herself with the minister on some of the issues of the department. But I know there should be a team from DTPS that is with us here. They are here in case there are issues that they need to fill in the gap. Over to the team.
Thank you very much, Chair. I have already thanked the members for inviting. with an apology, though, that Mrs. Mzuzoyana, our Chief Financial Officer, couldn't join us this morning today. The reason being that we've put her on special leave because we are busy looking at some of the aspects of how we've run the finance department as SAPO. So she's not at the moment reporting for work on that basis. I also, Chair, would like to just initially give an indication on some of the issues that you might have come across in the media in the recent times. We do have some challenges which have been with us as SAPO for quite some time in terms of our relationships and the management thereof with our labor partners. In particular, this time we have a situation where one of our unions, which is the Communication Workers Union, is quite unhappy with the settlement that we reached last year with the other two unions in the leadership forum, as they had actually stopped attending that particular forum, and therefore they are still pushing that they want us to agree with them on a different set of figures. If I could remind the committee, we actually agreed on a 6.5% salary increases with the other two unions, which is DEPACO and SAPAU, in the leadership forum. We also indicated to them that at this juncture, the organization SAPO is unable to afford to pay pay the salary increase from early last year, and therefore we would work with them to monitor the financial performance of the organization, because at this stage, due to the strike, we have lost a lot of income, and even after the strike we're still seeing that income is not recovering as quickly as we thought it would. So we actually indicated to them that we will monitor the situation, but we will not commit to paying the back pay as soon as the strike ends, because we can't afford to do that. We don't have the cash. We also had agreed on a conversion process of a period of 24 months with the two unions, and as the CW would like us to speed that up to 18 months. We are unfortunately unable to do that, as we have also had to halt that process in light of the financials that are still not recovered. And that was part of the agreement as well, that we would wait for or monitor the financial performance of the organization to allow it to recover. So those are the main sources of the disagreements. We are engaging with them. There's a number of other areas at which we are talking to our labor partners. We have a process that's facilitated by the CCMA where we are talking to them and working with them to develop and resuscitate all the interaction forums from regions right up to national. We also, between myself and the CEO, are meeting with them at a national level. In fact, yesterday afternoon, both of us had meetings. I had a meeting with the presidents of the unions, where unfortunately CW was also not able to attend, and the CEO was present at my meeting, and he also had a meeting with all the unions in an extended grouping where he took them through the performance of the business in terms of where we are. Unfortunately, we do have still threats of a looming strike by the Communication Workers Union. We're hopeful that it will not get to that, because we are very committed to continuously engaging with them to find solutions to all of this. We also are engaging customers and talking to customers. I personally visited top 20 customers of SAPO from the main business. I'll still continue to talk to customers from the retail business with the aim of re-establishing trust and confidence between us and the customers in an attempt to actually win them back and get them to continue to support SAPO. To that effect, we also have started very lately, though, to talk to government in terms of where can we actually find more room to serve government, because without stronger revenue streams, then SAPO is going to struggle. then want to conclude my opening remarks with the turnaround intervention. I have put a slide in front of us, Chair, that just outlines the process in terms of where we started and where actually are we at the moment. You would realize, Chairperson, that we in NN started to do the detailed work on the 8th of December because we first had to identify the right people to assist me in the team that is actually the technical intervention team. If I could remind the committee that my appointment was on the 7th of November 2014, and about 2 weeks I spent actually looking at various options in terms of identifying the team, and then I engaged the minister and the department, and we then identified people that had actually done work at SAPO, a very detailed amount of work. In as far as SAPO was concerned, because they had reviewed all the work that had been done by consultants in SAPO in 2013 when they were engaged. They reviewed all the work that had been done by consultants in SAPO from 2003 to identify what are the things that had been recommended, what had been implemented of that. And therefore we found it quite attractive to actually engage them because they were in a position to bring all of that knowledge to this particular intervention. So we started then on the 5th of January with an in-depth analysis of after the break of gathering the data, benchmarking the data, and reviewing all our business streams. And that process we finished in the week of the 19th of January. And we have then consolidated that and then developed some of the things that are highlighting our findings. We've engaged all the executives in that particular process. We are now at a stage where we are concluding identifying turnaround opportunities and quantifying them. And the purpose of the meeting yesterday with the president of Labour was to outline to them the process that's going to roll out, where we're now going to engage with them in as far as those quantities and those opportunities for turnaround, so that we get buy-in from Labour in terms of what we think is going to happen. Once we do that, we're then going to develop an implementation program for the turnaround, and then we will have a complete turnaround strategy. The process will then take that to the minister and the deputy president who's overseeing the turnaround process. And once we have engaged with them, we have said not later than the 15th of March, we would then be ready to present to the committee our turnaround strategy. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Thank you, Chair, members of the committee. We would like to move you to the next phase of the discussion, which is going to focus on the financial performance of SAP for the financial period ending the 31st of March of 2014. The colleagues here, Chair, will also assist me during the course of the presentation, and will also assist me later on during the question and answer session. Chair, members of the committee, it is regrettable that SAPO once again has to present to you numbers that do not represent a healthy financial and a healthy operational situation. We continue with the contraction of the mail volumes, which has continued unabated from 2008. And if you look at it between 2008 and last year, it represents more than 20% of volume decline, which is quite significant. The industrial action that SAPO has experienced, most certainly from the period of 2011 up to the financial period that we are talking about, has indeed exacerbated the situation. And this is more critical from the point of view of the delivery of the government services to the communities, and equally so from the point of view that the bulk of our volumes actually originate from the private sector. So each and every time we've got disruptions of this nature, private sector push their efforts to find alternative solutions to using SAPO. And that on its own further worsens the situation with regards to declining volumes. We have also seen a fair amount of digitization, where particularly the private sector customers prefer to use digital or electronic mail to communicate with their customers instead of the conventional letter items. While SAPO is able to participate at that level, it is not a reserved area, which makes it easier for private sector entities to get into that space and actually communicate directly with their customers, therefore bypassing the South African Post Office system and the SAPO infrastructure. And all these factors happen in the backdrop of SAPO having quite significant fixed costs. 90% of our costs are actually fixed, which means, therefore, that with declining volumes, we continue to have a widening gap between revenues that are coming down and costs that are increasing. And ultimately, that puts severe strain on the financials of the company, particularly on the cash flows of the organization. We are still very much dependent on mail in terms of revenue contribution, with mail still sitting in the upper 60s. And really, nothing much has improved over the past 3 years with regards to the overall contribution of mail into revenues, which therefore means the other sectors must be declining. It therefore means the retail revenue must have been declining. It therefore means the volumes and revenues from the parcels business as well have not been growing, which is why we have continued to have significant contribution of our revenues coming from mail. So as mail declines in volumes, it continues to put a lot of pressure on the top line growth without adequate support from the other revenue streams. So there is an express need going forward to find ways of ensuring that we diversify our revenue streams to cushion the organization against the declining mail. I've already alluded to the industrial action that we have had. And as Dr. Mushaba has indicated, it's still a situation that SAPO faces despite numerous efforts, which we're going to talk to briefly later on. It still continues to be an Achilles tendon for the organization amidst the various inter-union dynamics as well, the dynamics amongst the unions themselves, not necessarily just between management and the unions. We can go to the next slide. The highlights, just a few highlights of some of the things that SAPO has been able to achieve during the year under review is that there was still an increase in the postal outlets that were opened, which has increased the branch network to 2,486. I think the key elements for us, certainly with myself in the past 8 months that I've been in the organization, and certainly with the arrival of Dr. Lushan and his team, where we're looking into the business, trying to look into the business with a different set of eyes that says, if we are sitting with that network, how can we fully leverage that network and use that network as the core competence of SAPO? how can we fully utilize this network to generate enough revenue to sustain the organization. And I'm sure in the work that the intervention team is working on, we will be able to crystallize the opportunities that reside in that vast network that is second to none in the country. How can we better leverage on that? We also continued with the address expansion as part of our mandate, and certainly the aggressive nature in which this has been pursued over a number of years has been to a degree heartwarming, obviously that being negated by the infrequency of the deliveries to those addresses because of the various interruptions that we've experienced, as I've indicated. We still see a lot of traffic coming through our post office branches, over 50 million customers served in the 2014 financial year. And once again, we are asking ourselves, how can we better utilize that traffic to create enough revenue for the organization? What sort of opportunities can we explore? And again, you will see in my language that we are now talking futuristically of an example that will be very cognizant of its social mandate and its need to comply with the license that it has. But it has to balance that with the commercial sustainability and not do one at the expense of the other. And that, without doubt, going forward, Chair, will require very, very mature leadership, but will also require very, very disciplined execution of the programs that we agreed to, which, as we know, has not necessarily been the strength of SABO. So that's one of the areas going forward that we'll be focusing on. We have seen very good growth coming through the renewal of motor vehicle licenses. In fact, it is one of the very few income streams for SABO that has been growing. Very good participation from the various provincial transport departments. It is not coordinated at national level. It comes through the provincial sector or provincial departments. Provinces like Eastern Cape, etc., have been very, very embracing of this initiative, and the impression that we get is that customers and the public really welcome the opportunity of renewing their licenses within, in most cases, a 10-kilometer walking distance, although some certainly in outlying areas will walk a little bit more than that. We have worked very hard with the Limpopo Department of Education. It has not necessarily been an easy ride for operational reasons there, but we're happy to report that during this period of review, more than 6.3 million books were delivered. There were still some logistics issues from how the order of the books are placed, the correct number of books, the allocation to schools. Those logistical problems are still there. Nevertheless, the project went relatively well, and so was the project of delivering 900,000 books in Northern Cape. To us, really, this was very important to indicate that SABO does have the capability of playing a very important role in the delivery of books. And in some of these cases, we were called upon as a last-minute solution, and we have obliged, and we have given it our level best, as I have said, albeit there are some operational challenges and some integration issues now and again between ourselves and the education department that we were servicing in Zimbabwe. Chair, I just wanted to highlight those few, really without going into the detail, of the achievements that we achieved by the organization despite the very difficult year. We're going to take the committee through to some of the financials, the highlights of the financials, and Mr. Lenny Governor is going to assist us with that. Thank you, John.
Thank you. For the year ended 31st March 2014, the revenue achieved was 5.9 billion. If you look at the growth compared to the prior year, we had a marginal growth of 1%. As the acting CEO was saying, in terms of mail and courier volume, we see a decline. Mail volume has been declining annually about 5%. and courier volumes, and including the price increase, we only had an increase of 2%. If you look at the revenue, the poor revenue for the past 2 years is also placing pressure on the cash flow position. Our expenditure for the year was 6.5 billion rand, which increased by 429 million rand compared to the prior year, or 7%. If you look at our revenue and expenditure gap, it's growing by 6%, which has resulted in an operating loss of 525 million. If you compare that to the prior year, the operating loss has increased by 366 million. Finance income improved by 22 million rand to 142 million rand. Our interest paid has declined by 125 million rand to 192 million. The loss before tax for the year was 511 million. If you compare that to the prior year, the increase has been 253 million, which is a 98% increase compared to prior year. In terms of the taxation, this is just a deferred taxation recognition or timing difference, which is a benefit of 150 million rand, which has reduced the loss before tax to 361 million. In terms of the other comprehensive income, the significant item there is the first-time recognition of heritage assets in terms of the thematic environment, which was 22 million rand. The net other comprehensive income was 2.3 million rand after taxation. So the total comprehensive loss for the year was 359 million. When you compare that to the prior year, it was an increase of 22 million rand. I think the most important thing is to look at the loss before taxation. Because the taxation, the deferred taxation of 150 million rand is just a timing difference. And if we continue losses going forward, in the future years, we'd have to reverse this, the gain of 150 million rand. If you look at the loss for 2 years, it's over 700 million rand. And in terms of funding, if you're not generating sufficient cash, the business is going to get into problems because if your business is not generating cash to invest in the business in terms of capex and other opportunities. As I can see, I'm also saying, SAPO is heavily dependent on, largely dependent on mail revenue. Mail revenue still contributes 67% to the total revenue, which is not a healthy position. If you look at what has happened compared to prior year, the mail revenue has declined by 1%. So any change in the mail volume decline affects the net loss position. If you look at mail volume, it's declined by 5%. Bulk mail is one of our major revenue streams, which is mainly the business who posts bulk mail. And bulk mail makes up 61% of total mail revenue. Bulk mail has declined by 51 million items to 992 million items. That is very significant. We had growth in e-business, which is up 111 million rand, which shows the e-business revenue growth in terms of contribution increased by 2% to 4%. The logistics revenue, we actually had a real decline because we had a 6% tariff increase. You got an increase of 2%, so there's a real decline in volumes and logistics revenue. And logistics revenue has remained constant in terms of contribution to total group revenue. In terms of retail space, the motor vehicle license, we had an increase of 32 million rand to 205 million rand. So in terms of retail revenue, the contributions remain 7%, because in terms of other revenue streams, in terms of contribution, we had decline in terms of other acceptance, for example, prepaid revenue, municipality payments. So in terms of revenue, but the motor vehicle license makes up a significant portion of retail revenue, over 50%. The post-bank non-interest revenue declined by 1% to 4%, and interest and salary revenue remain constant at 7%. In terms of our cost structure remains high, fixed at 90%. So any change or a change in revenue or lower revenue, in the short term, we were not able to lower the cost base. In a commercial environment, when revenue is lower, you tend to match your cost of revenue, and you need a healthy cost and margin income ratio of 90% to 85%. Our cost and income ratio is of 100%, so every 1 rand we have in revenue, we spend more in costs. Our primary cost drivers are staff, transport, and property, which makes up 79% of our cost. If you look at our staff expenditure, increased by 1% to 57%. So our total expenditure, 57% is spent on staff. Our staff costs are 3.7 billion rand, increased year on year by 9%. Our total transport costs of 747 million rand, declined by 12% to 11%. We have some benefits of the national line optimization, where we were running separate national line outs in terms of CFG, the courier, and SAPO. By combining them, we have some benefits, and benefits of cost savings of 30 million rand were realized. The property expenditure of 697 million rand, in terms of the contribution to total expenditures, remains constant at 11%. As mentioned, the fixed cost at 90% is extremely unhealthy. So whenever the revenue changes, in a short term, you cannot change your cost base. If you look at our total asset base, it's of 11.2 billion rand. It increased by 5% or 550 million. The increase in the total assets is 205 million funds received from proposed banks, the National Treasury, and also to match the growth in deposits of 245 million in short-term investments. I think one of the most important things to note that our total deposit fund, 4.7 billion rand, which is including current liabilities, we have total short-term investment cash, which is ring fence proposed bank, of 6.4 billion rand. So we always try to maintain, there must always be a surplus in terms of the post bank short-term investments and the deposits fund. There's a surplus of 1.7 billion rand. In terms of the retained income, if you look at the last 2 years, we have a loss position. So in terms of equity and reserves, that declined because of the loss position. I think when you look at the balance sheet of 11.3 billion, 3 billion rand, it looks pretty strong at a group level. But once you strip out the post bank, the post bank of 6.4 billion short-term investment cash, the sum of balance sheet is not very strong. While we say that in terms of what we also be making, in a healthy balance sheet, you should be able to go to the market and do get funding. But with a supple current balance sheet, we'll not be able to secure funding. Because in terms of our current assets, exceeding the current liabilities, those pose the challenges, and also your ability to service your debts. This is just a summary of the statement of cash flows. If you look at the current financial year, the business operations consume cash. Instead of generating cash, they utilize cash of 334 million. And if you look at the past 2 years, the business has utilized cash of 764 million rand. And we think this is not sustainable. And it comes back to having low revenues and high costs. And if you continue in this base here, you're going to have challenges. In terms of capital expenditure, we spent 185 million rand in capital expenditure. Our deposits fund increased by 245 million rand, which is matched by post bank short-term investments. And we still maintain the surplus in terms of short-term investments of post bank. And we receive funding of 205 million rand from National Treasury for post bank. Our cash flow position remains severely under pressure and remains severely constrained. In terms of the guarantees that have been approved, SAPO initially had an overdraft of 50 million rand in terms of working capital to meet its day-to-day obligations. The bank overdraft was increased to 320 million rand, but in terms of the guarantee, we would receive a guarantee from the department and has treasury of 270 million rand. So the 50 million rand is unfunded at the moment. In terms of the guarantee, we receive a guarantee of 1.6 billion rand for the financial year, otherwise the financial statements would have been qualified, or we would receive an adverse audit opinion. So we require a guarantee of 1.6 billion rand to receive not an adverse or an opinion, but we receive a matter of emphasis, which is more on the growing concern of SAPO in terms of whether SAPO in the near future can meet its obligation when they become due.
Chair, if I can just also take the committee through some of the post-balance sheet events that were deemed to be significant or material. The major one, Chair, is without doubt the labor industrial action. Post the 31st of March, we saw very crippling industrial action that engulfed SAPO. It actually happened over 4 waves. The last wave being the one that was really crippling to the organization, and the one that, from our point of view, brought the organization to its knees from a financial point of view. It's been over 4 months, and since the last part of November, when we were able to sign an agreement with some of the unions, with one of the major unions, the Communication Workers Union, opting not to sign that agreement, as they felt their members deserved more, and they felt that the conditions that we had put in the agreement, most notably the condition that talked to SAPO going to convert casuals
subject to affordability. They were very uncomfortable with that proviso and opted not, therefore, to sign the agreement, a position that they have maintained till today. The resolution itself was frighteningly violent. A number of our employees were exposed to severe trauma, for which support has been provided through various channels. Nevertheless, a number of our employees and regrettably female employees as well were subjected to inhumane treatment by the strikers, and some of our managers were violently attacked. One of them in fact was attacked in his own house and spent a number of weeks in the ICU. It was an incredibly violent strike which spoke to me as perhaps someone who was new at that time, which spoke to a problem just with the psyche of the organization, that something much, much more comprehensive needs to take place in their organization in order for us to break away with the past. The past is not a pretty past. There are numerous incidences, numerous decisions, and indeed numerous actions that have been taken by both management and employees, which just fuels the grudges and the negativity in that organization. And there has to be a way of breaking from that path if we are going to build a sustainable and operationally vibrant post office. Arrests were made. All in all, we reported in excess of 212 cases to the South African Police Services. Initially, the reaction from the South African Police Service was not that inspiring, to a point that some of the cases that had been opened were closed without us being notified, no, without us being involved or asked questions about what actually transpired. The situation changed, though, significantly once we started engaging with the higher levels of authority within SAPS, and certainly the arrival of Dr. Lushaba helped us a lot in getting the hearing with the SAPS, which then has led to the conviction of those employees who participated in criminal activities, both in Pretoria in particular, as well as in Bloemfontein, where one of our female employees was subjected to an extremely inhumane and an extremely embarrassing situation. So those employees have faced the might of the law and also have been dealt with internally as well. We have, as Dr. Sibo Lushaba indicated, we have been engaging with the union leadership through various structures. We started with the leadership forum, which was formed with the assistance and the directive. We have since moved into other structures that are continuing to engage with, particularly with the support of the CCMA. And we hope through that the relationship between unions and management, as well as the relationship amongst the union themselves, will start to turn positive. As we are aware, the board resigned, and since then we've got Dr. Chavez as the administrator, and we also have the deputy president overseeing the development itself. We've started the engagement with the Auditor General as well. We have replaced the previous auditors that we have as the resolution taken at the AGM on the 22nd of December. We are currently, as I've indicated, focusing on improving the industrial relations within the organization. And we engaging with the CCMA, amongst other key partners that we work with, to normalize the situation. The other focus area for us, of course, with the arrival of the technical team supporting Dr. Shaba, has been the corporatization of post-bank, which we are now pushing for some significant pace. We understand it's a matter that has been on the table for a number of years, and there is currently a lot of pressure from the ministry and a lot of work that is now taking place in engagements with the Reserve Bank to bring this process to our completion. A lot of work is taking place regarding regaining customer confidence, and almost all the customers that that Dr. Lushaba has engaged with, that we have engaged with, have been very consistent in that they are uncomfortable giving more business to SAPO until there is certainty regarding the industrial relations. We have shared that sentiment with the union leaders. Yesterday, after meeting USASA, where we talk about the preparation for the FTP or DDT project, I shared the same sentiment with the union leaders as well, that it's across the board. All customers are tentative about the industrial relations, so their positive contribution towards that is very much important. And as I've indicated, we continue working with various stakeholders on the government DDT project. Our level of preparedness is quite advanced, which is a point that was acknowledged by the CEO of USASA yesterday, and we look forward to working jointly and successfully with them in that regard.
It's just difficult to follow where they are, because their presentation is not the same as the one that we've received. And it's really very difficult to focus and to make notes if our presentation differs from the one that is currently being presented. So I just wanted to bring that to your attention. And I was wondering if we can't get copies, even though related, but I think that would make it easier to engage. Thank you.
I think the issue here is that they have not followed the sequence as far as Peter. There are slides that are not there.
Yeah.
Is it? Okay. Let's, you want to raise the same thing, Honorable?
Thank you, Chairperson. No, I just want to assist. It was emailed to us by the committee secretary, so you will find it already in your mailboxes. Thank you.
Okay. It's the same. Okay. Apologies, Honorable Members. Because that's what I was saying, is just that what I picked up is that they didn't follow exactly the slide, because what Dr. Lushaba started with is at the back, and then they went backwards to go and start at the other side. So I've been following that way. But apologies, we should have made sure that we have the same presentation. We'll definitely make sure that members have, which is just to... Yeah. Okay. Right. Fine. Okay.
Just for clarity, Chairperson, I was going to also explain that we also had initially submitted 42 slides worth of a presentation, but we felt it would be unfair to take the committee through 42 slides, so we basically shrunk it to 15 slides. But any questions, of course, that can arise from the rest of the 42 slides, we are happy to deal with. Thank you very much.
Just a quick apology, Chairperson, for the inconvenience. We're looking to it. But in a way, Chair, members of the committee, brings us to the end of the presentation, and we're able to take questions. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Members, just again, reiterate my apologies. I should have just made sure that we've got, but I've been following with mine and all the guidelines. We do have on electronically emails. But I think we must just make sure that every time we have hard copies as a backup for members as well. I'm going to open the floor for comments, questions. I hope even though members didn't have, were able to just make notes for themselves. Just to open for comments, questions, so that we interact. You'd know that from the presentation, there was an overview just to show how they are tendering. That's what Dr. Lushaba was doing. To show how they're trying to turn around the situation, address issues, brief us of the status, and then the presentation went to take us in terms of what we needed to do as they presented their annual report. So members are still free to raise issues that come from the annual report itself, but as well based on the presentation. So anyway, it's still within the discussion, but members must just be clear in what they are asking. If you are making a reference to the annual report, just make sure that you make that reference so that we are able to follow in terms of the question. If it's on the presentation or it's just a general question, just indicate. I'm going to note hands. Honorable Mackenzie, Honorable Dongeni, Honorable Killian, Honorable Shin. In that order.
Thank you, Chairperson. Welcome other. It was clear from my perspective that when you arrived, through you, Chairperson, when you arrived at SAPO, it was in a crisis. No mail was flowing, and very quickly things started to flow again. So full credit to you and your team for that. It's been a while since SAPO have appeared before the committee, including on the tabling of the annual report, so we're very pleased to see you here. The committee researcher, Mr. Nenner, has captured much of the information that needed to be captured in the document we had as a committee, so I'm not going to rehash those points. But just to emphasize that in terms of the post office...
That document is not sent to entities.
Sorry.
It's for the committee. So they will be lost what you're talking about. That's an analysis from the side of the committee.
Our committee researcher has sort of pulled the highlights, or rather the lowlights, from the annual report in a committee document, so I won't raise them again here. And if we're very honest, this annual report that's been tabled is very late. So it's actually not relevant to what's going on in the post office now, other than to detect a trend which is firmly downward, and there's only it's almost gone out of control. If we go from a 360 million rand loss to a loss of 1.3 billion projected for this year, it's clear it's an organization in severe trouble. I think in terms of the presentation we've had today, we've seen, and you know what the problems are as an organization. You've identified the problem: declining mail volumes. It isn't news. It's been happening since 2008. So you've seen this happening. It's difficult for me as a member of Parliament to kind of lay this now at your door, because essentially many of you are part of a new management team. The previous board that resigned, and I think this is the first time I've regretted the resignation of that board, because in fact they have a lot to answer for in terms of the performance of the post office, and it would have been good to have some of them sitting here so they can get an idea of how we felt. But just looking at what would have been essentially an adverse audit report, as you said, sir, if it wasn't for the government stepping into that gap with the guarantee, that the board met 13 times and continued to exercise what passed for some sort of fiduciary responsibility, when in fact they didn't do that. They were 21 times. At an average, and I'm open to correction again, Chairperson, of around 30,000 rand a meeting per member, that they met 21 times in a year presiding over an organization that was slipping into an abyss of a loss of this magnitude. It just defies belief. And one of the questions I have for you, especially you, Dr. Lushaba, is, are we going to take action against those board members for the neglect of their fiduciary responsibility during this time? I think that's the critical question. Just to, you know, we've seen people like J. Arthur Brown go to jail for 15 years for fiddling with organizations financially, and given that this is a taxpayer-funded organization, I would certainly like to see some sort of action taken against those board members beyond purely a resignation. Payments to suppliers are listed as a problem in the annual report. Can you tell me, you know, we've seen reported instances of retail centres shutting down. Can you tell me if that is still a problem, and whether you've taken steps to fix that? You spoke about consultants, and you gave 2 years, Dr. Lushaba. At the beginning you said 2013, and then you said 2003, so I'm not sure which it is. But the consultants that you spoke to that have been reviewing the SAPO business model over the years, I'd be very interested to know what their comments were, some more, and what the mandate and the scope of work that they've been tasked to do. What I've seen on just a few oversights around to postal centres, and certainly one specific on the International Mail Centre, is that there appears to be a lot of automation equipment installed, but none of it is working. And there's lots of emphasis on using manual labour and people to lug parcels around. So you have these superb automation systems that are simply not in use. In terms of resolving labour relations issues, a number of casual workers, as far as I understand it, were dismissed or fired, or their contracts were not renewed as a result of the strike. We have a lot of people in acting positions, which the Auditor General always identifies as a problem when it comes to annual reports, including Mr. Andrew Nongogo, who is certainly a very competent individual. And sometimes he reminds me of the Andrew Ettinger of or the Ettinger of Eskom, because he appears and he takes all the flak for the post office. And he does it very bravely and courageously time after time. So full credit for that. Those consultants, if you can just give me more information on that. In terms of your turnaround strategy, and we've had, with respect, gentlemen, we've had people come before the committee time after time, and including today, and a lot of the information that you presented to us. I've only been an MP for a year, so I'm still new at this. But I feel like I've heard it all before. There's nothing new in this document other than a catalogue of financial disaster, you know, where the numbers just seem to grow. There's nothing new that you're presenting to me that says we have a clear idea of where we're going to take this organisation and how we're going to move it forward. There's nothing here that speaks to that. The individual units within SAPA, I look at Speed Services, for example, which to me is an excellent business. You know, it's reliable, has a very good reputation for delivery, it's cost effective, and when I've looked at the financials that have been presented before this committee, it's profitable. Then you look at the Witbos Mail Centre and you look at the International Mail Centre. They're very different in their business operations, you know, the kind of business that they are. And you've come into this review with a top-down sort of financial approach. Have you gone and consulted with those various entities and with the management and executives of those entities to find out what they can do as separate cost and profit centers to actually improve the businesses from the bottom up? Because I'm sure you have a wealth of information there. In terms of the Public Protectors Report and the SIU, we had Advocate Vassani, who unfortunately has left the unit, presenting to us on those investigations. One of the problems, and unfortunately we get a lot of our information from the media, including the extension of your mandate, Dr. Lishaba, which, with respect, Chairperson, we heard a month ago because I read it in the papers. Those investigations revealed or have revealed systemic corruption within the post office, and this has been a problem for years. It's not something new. And every time you hear a representative of the Communication Workers Union or you engage with people at the post office, corruption comes up. So it's well known that this corruption is systemic, it's endemic, and it hasn't gone anywhere. I noticed right at the beginning you said the chief financial officer, correct me if I'm wrong, has been put on special leave, so that's obviously a move in the right direction. If you can give me an idea of what you're doing to firstly hurry along the results of those reports, and to fix the problem with corruption in the post office, what it relates to, and what steps you're taking. If I look at the loss you're posting and the figures I've heard of corruption, if you took the amount of corruption, you could probably offset that loss.
But you need to make a full presentation on the McKenzie.
Very, very quick, Jefferson, very quick. You know, we haven't seen the post office for a while, so I'm kind of getting all my balls in what I can, if you don't mind. The elephant on the balance sheet is the post office's property portfolio. Have you done an audit on the buildings that you have, the occupancy rate of those buildings, and is there any way we can take, or you can take, the buildings that you're not using, sell those, raise capital that way, and recapitalize the post office, put that money into systems and people that you need to make this entity viable. Clearly, labor relations and the number of people you employ as a fixed cost is an issue for you. Have you looked at automation systems to reduce the dependence on manual labor? And what would it require to get that in place? Then just quickly, very quickly, Chairperson, with your indulgence, to go to your last 3 to go to your presentation.
No, that's fine, so that we allow other members time. If we do,
sure. You talk about a need to diversify revenue streams, but you haven't mentioned what. Can you give us an idea of what you have in mind when you talk about revenue streams? Thank you, Chippers. The rest I'll put in writing.
Thank you, Chairperson. Morning, colleagues. I'm sorry for the late. My question, on your presentation in page 14, you talk about the success delivery on key projects like the DTT third job office. Have you trained your staff, especially in rural areas? And then question two, what is the turnaround time for repairing or fixing operational equipment like copier and faxing machine in SAPO, especially in offices in rural areas, because people are suffering there? And how many postal retail will be integrated to offer all services? On your presentation on page 24 and 25, you're talking about oversight feedback, but we didn't see anything about that on your presentation on page.
The question is on oversight issues that we had raised with you in when we were at the post office. So they literally meaning that you've got them listed, but there is no answer.
Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Chairperson. Since Honourable Mackenzie has covered quite a number of issues, I would just like to come back to the issue of the business model of SAPO. For the past 5 years, 6 years, we've been listening in similar meetings of the previous committee about the possibilities to turn around and to adjust and reinvent SAPO. Now, I want to know to what extent, and thank you for the administrator that is now there and trying to pull things together, what are the current possibilities that the administrator is looking at to make sure that those cost drivers and the fact that the business is largely built on mail, and we all know what is happening to mail in the world, that unless SAPO reinvents itself, it cannot make a profit and it cannot sustain itself. In fact, it's just going to go down further. Now, what interventions do you currently foresee could be made, and what are the successful post offices in the world doing? What are they doing? I mean, for instance, in Britain and everywhere else, how have they changed their business model? Secondly, annually we see and we know that you have universal service obligations. Obviously, that does not come without costs. So, in your license agreement with ICASA, there's also a sort of a problem because nobody else picks up the tickets for those additional costs but SAPO itself. We look at your increase in staff costs, not only you know, the terrible impact of the labour unrest, etc., but also just annual costs. If you open up more postal offices, it is going to have an impact on your balance sheet. So to what extent have you investigated other possibilities? Because with staff costs also come property and rental expenditure. Now, how are you going to balance that? Is there no model that can be investigated and assessed to determine if you cannot have a smaller hospital offers to provide the service in communities where you don't have many people, but at least have a footprint of SAPU in remote areas. How can you balance the, those sort of problems that you inherently face as a as an organization that also has to have a sort of a universal service responsibility? Yes, you have mentioned the fact that that you're looking at how you will leverage your network. You know, so I think it could get linked up with that. Then your labor unrest, and I'm happy that you're saying that you're engaging regularly with the union. You know, during the time of the strike, we were actually very concerned because it is a, typically a case of people perhaps not seeing the bigger picture. They're seeing the specific problems, and many of them are facing problems, you know, rising costs, et cetera, et cetera, but don't see the bigger picture that that they can actually strike themselves into a situation where SAPU will have to dismiss people. I mean, that is unfortunately the reality. What are you doing to engage the unions and to make them aware of the business model of SAPU? Because I'm concerned that we have confrontational meetings and not empowerment meetings. Just a better understanding of that. I think the only little light in the tunnel is probably the petrol fuel price that has come down for SAPU in the last year, Jefferson. Just one matter that I'm really very concerned about, and the Honourable McKenzie touched on that, and that is consequences for those who were in the position of accounting body. We have so many state institutions where people accept a position with serious fiduciary responsibility, and then in the end they resign and they just fly away in the dark and you don't hear ever again. So is the Dr. Sibu, are you perhaps looking at possible consequences for those people? What are we going to do to stop the whole trend of people not exercising extreme caution when they hold such offices? Also the fact that it appears that the risk committee didn't meet during the period. So clearly there were many red lights that people in authority didn't heed and did not respond to. So clearly we need to have a shake-up, not only in the management, but also going forward when we have a new board. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Jefferson. Yeah, just a couple of things. When do you expect to generate income from the rollout of the set-top boxes? I mean, are we looking at it coming into your bank accounts within the next year? But what is your timing for that, and what are you expecting your income there to be? Now, we've had, obviously, I think Julie and myself have, you know, heard this presentation 5 times before. And there's very little new in it, and apart from the crisis management. But, you know, it's been a long time coming. You know, we've seen the same story, you know, the same suggestions. And what actually disturbs me is that post office is now at what I call in a perfect storm. What we are seeing now is the culmination of years of, just put it benignly, incompetent management and flat-footed management without much imagination as to where, how to take the business forward, at the same time as the increasing labour pressure that was brought about by the campaign against labour brokers. Now, I think 3 years ago, we said that the scheme to incorporate the those employed casually through labour brokers was unaffordable and would break the post office, and it has. Now, the elephant in the room that we're not talking about is that for its business, for what it generates in business and what its operations, post office cannot afford the size of its staff.
So you're going to have to make very hard decisions about all these people who are underemployed but have unrealistic expectations about what they're entitled to earn. And that is a time bomb. It's hissing away quietly right now. And what political will is there by your shareholder to deal with that issue? Because that is what's going to sink the post office. At the same time, when we had expressed concern about the labour costs going up and your universal service fees coming down, what you were going to do about that? And there were some negotiations with Treasury to reintroduce the payment for your universal service obligations. Now Treasury is now bailing you out with a couple of billion. Is there any recognition that you actually do need Treasury money to pay for those universal service obligations to meet them? Because it's unrealistic to expect you to service post boxes in out of wherever without some kind of subsidy. I just basically want to know what are we going to do about the elephant in the room, and that's far too many staff. Thank you.
Let me start by acknowledging and congratulating Temple for achievement. You know, no matter how small achievement, congrats you on this. And coming back to the first summary by Dr. Lushaba, you know, whenever we have presentation from Temple, the question we always ask, and consistently so, is how realistic is the turnaround strategy? So I saw something that could be launched. If we can get maybe a brief deliberation on that to convince us that the strategy will indeed work this time, given the situation as the presentation. And on human capital development, SAPO spent 40.7 million on learning and development interventions. And we have asked in the past to be provided with information regarding, you know, the breakdown in terms of race and gender, the post level, and the provinces, you know, the package of beneficiaries, you know, as far as the development is concerned, and we don't have such till now. And on the risk management, I don't want to believe that we spend the whole financial year identifying the risks without addressing them. What did you do between the time when you identified the risk and the time when you have this huge damage? For us, we convinced that we tried something, even if we didn't win on that, but there was something that was done to take action and reprimand whoever was irresponsible. The last one on audit opinion, I just want to read the sentence, please. It says, in most cases, before publishing an adverse opinion, the auditor advises organizations, accountants, and officers of the problems and works with them to correct the financial reporting situation, so that an opinion can be published that is either unqualified or qualified rather than adverse. Given this statement, it doesn't look like you have an excellent opportunity. Can we get the reasons why you defy or why the non-compliance in as far as this advice is concerned? Because we had the opportunity to be advised and act accordingly to minimize the risk that we have now.
Members, I think from my side, starting with GST, if they can just tell me what's their responsibility relating and what is it that they've been doing in supporting SAP. Just if they can just go in detail. We've got the team, like it's here from DTPS, because I'm trying to understand the role of DTPS SOE unit with relation to the SOEs. If they can just explain what is their responsibility, how do they relate to entities, and I'll come to details later. But for me, another thing, members, that is, while acknowledging that the tabling of the annual report happens way, way late, and at times it makes a difference because it's not part of our VRRR process. So we're dealing with the issues that are sort of, I don't know when to say post dated or what, but something that is a bit below belated while the issues are still fresh. And one of the issues I don't think is within the ambit of SAPO, but it's something that from community point of view that we need to look at. I think at some point we need to discuss as Parliament the regularization of board meetings. Actually, Honourable Mackenzie, I said it to you when I've gone back to counties 22 meetings. Those are meetings of the board besides the committees. But if you are to look at the subcommittees, that you never, none of them have had, if you look at them, all of them have had a quorum. All those subcommittees. And you ask yourself how to expect an institution or an organization to function effectively in that current situation. So the outcome tells you where the problem as well was. The problem was started from the board level. That you had a board that either did not know what they were there to do in terms of their responsibility. Because if you are to have subcommittees which are supposed to be the driver of the work of the board, board meetings for me are not the crux or the huge impact. But your subcommittees, where you have a remuneration subcommittee, your risk subcommittee, your audit subcommittee, they are non-functional. No wonder you have risks that are not mitigated, because the people who are supposed to guide and say an oversight over the executive are not there to do that. But if you have a board that sits 22 days, and I've counted one of the months I've said literally four times, when does the executive have time to do work? Because it simply says that the executive is not there doing work, they are forever sitting in board meetings. If they are not in a subcommittee, they are at a board meeting, literally in a manner. It's a crisis. It's a serious issue. That's something from a committee point of view, I think we need to find a way through engagement, and I'm happy the SOE unit is here, because this is what they need to do. It's not only this entity. I've picked it up with CETA, they have the same problem. Boards are regularly meeting. The boards are not there to be management. The board's responsibility is oversight. And you can't have a board that is full-time in an entity. Because this is what it tells us. This board was literally full-time. They stopped working somewhere else. And if you are to look, if an institution does not have money, because you've got to pay for this board meeting, it's cost of sitting, it's cost of accommodation and transport. So you've got to look at it at a very much a holistic approach. This can't be accepted. It's really uncalled for. And that's something from our point, we'll have to sit and look how do we do. We don't have legislation in front of us. Either even recommend to the minister to do some level of a regulation to all these entities. Limit the number of board meetings. We can't have the situation. Then, the issue of group CEO process. Because this process started last year. Where are we? Because the sooner it's wrapped up, I hear with a new one of the CFO, which we welcome as the committee, because there were quite a number of issues that were raised with us. And the other time I highlighted that at some point we had concerns as the committee in the manner even how the CFO was responding to issues that we were raising. But we would wait for the process. We don't want to influence the process, which is an administrative process. But what I'm just appealing, Dr. Lushaba, is speeding up of this, because themselves are costly. You have somebody who's sitting at home earning a salary. Which you've got to pay for an acting person, because you can't just have a person with new responsibilities and not pay an acting allowance. So you've got to be able to speedily resolve those things, because it's a cost that we are conscious about and we are a bit worried about. The other issue which is a concern to the team, your targets on your strategic plan and what you're reporting do not match in your annual report. It's a concern. I'm not so sure how it happened. But we expect, when you say in terms of our strategic plan, you table strategic plan, you had 71 targets in your strategic plan. annual report, you reported on 65 times. That's the discrepancy. It should not happen. When you account for what you have committed yourself in. So that we do not expect. There's just on the annual report as well. I'm just trying to understand the acting group super executive. The highlighting, we note that Treasury is giving you money for the corporatization of Postbank. Maybe just take us through in terms of how you're hoping to get the balance from Postbank itself. Because there's a reflection on the annual report that you get the remainder of the money. Just highlight that. How are you hoping to get that remainder of the money there? And I think somebody raised the issue of SOE, the license obligation versus the funding. Maybe let's understand. To understand some of the difficulties, and I agree with the members when they spoke about it, because we had asked to say, do an analysis for us in terms of your buildings when we were there. What is your portfolio, asset portfolio? How can you utilize it to assist in the turning around of the situation? So that we are very clear in, and I'm raising these things because we are going to go to the budget process as Parliament. And it would be important for these questions to be answered prior to that. We would want them answered prior to that, so that by the time we deal with your tabling of your strategic plan, together with tabling of the budget from Treasury, we understand what will make SAPO work. I think one sitting, I just need to say that we do have confidence that things are starting, there's some light in the tunnel. But we need to emphasize the work. And some of the colleagues have said, Dr. Lushala, that you found a really messy situation. And I think a couple of your team has found a messy situation. But we want it turning around, because for us where we are sitting, there is no option of selling post office. I think I emphasize this over and over again. I've been asked in the media several times in the interviews to say, don't you think it's time that post office is privatized? And I think we still have an opportunity to turn the situation around. The issue is to create credible systems in the institution. The other issue that I want to speak to is your IT. Your IT that is worrying, and you highlight in your report around even the scams that you have had to suffer. Have we turned that around? Because if we can't as well, it's going to be a problem. I mean, the cyber crimes are growing. If your systems are not tight, if your IT protection in terms of your system is not, especially if you are to receive the license of Postbank, it's going to be a difficulty if we are to deal with that. So I'm raising this. We are noting the financial situation as the committee, as we're saying, it's related, because we would have had an opportunity to make our comments in the budget review. And the consequence of that is that we have not expressed our opinion when the budget review is tabled, and you know that finance takes that into consideration, what the committee has said when they do allocation. So we're just praying and hoping that when tabling is happening tomorrow, God helps SAPO, the minister listen, because it becomes difficult. When they do budget process, it has passed. When they do budget process, they do look at the recommendation of the committee that they would have made. So because of the process and the delay in tabling, and that's why I kept on emphasizing to some, it's important to table the annual report. The delay has consequences. So that's why I'm saying we're hoping to God tomorrow that the minister would have it in his mercy to allocate something to thing, Dr. Michelle, why are we looking at the issue of the decline in names? I mean, have we done a comparative analysis and study as SAPO? How are other post offices globally surviving? What are the new trends that you are to look at? Because for me, that's another discussion that we must have. So that when we support, we know. And I look at, when you look at maybe you and I might feel that this is a new turnaround strategy, but if you have to go back since 2010, SAPO has been on a turnaround strategy. It's exhausting, to be honest. Because the challenge we have is to convince us as Parliament, but with general public, that this time it's indeed a turnaround strategy. I don't know how you're going to do that, but that's the challenge you have in your hands. Like, people have had turnaround strategies since 2010, and instead of things improving, they've been spiraling towards not progress, but a down spiral. It's sort of a down spiral. So, for me, those are the comments in terms of that. I think another thing that I need to welcome is the conviction. I think we raised this even when we did our oversight. So until there are consequences for wrongdoing. And I think somehow with your employment equity forums, if you had not done that, this thing of no work, no pay must be implemented as well. Colleagues who are unions must understand. If they're going to stay away, there will be no increase. It helps you, we have saved some money. And so your cost of salaries are a bit high. So if they stay away for 3 months, you save 3 months of salary, some millions that you would have as a reserve, which we don't promote today. But unless people know their consequences, and I think the reason why the last strike, and that's what we raised as a concern, the last strike is when people could stay at home because they knew at the end of the month they can complain that their salaries didn't come through while they were sitting at home. So that should assist us. I hope the other issue that you have raised, Mr. Longoff, I don't remember seeing it. There were concerns raised by other unions in terms of recognition, the issue of membership. I don't know if you've dealt with it, because they had felt that there is no audit in terms of which union has which number of membership. And therefore, they were feeling that they are done disservice because the audit has not done a full audit of their members, and therefore they were not getting the benefits that needed to be. So I thought, let me just say some of these issues. I think I agree with the colleagues. We've taken some time, a lot of your doing at times, for the engagement to happen. And we wanted to give that space. I think when we did the oversight, Honorable Mukhezi, it was in November. Unfortunately, we were not there. Just as we were about to go on recess, we did interact with the entity just to check progress at that time on issues, and we did reflect on some of the issues that we wanted to see. And so far from that meeting to this one, I think we're starting to see, quite honestly, some of the changes that we wanted to see, and some of the issues are starting to fall into place. I think that we need to acknowledge. We shouldn't be a committee that complains, but when we see progress, we need to highlight that there is progress that we are seeing. And unfortunately, because members of the community are not here, because I wanted to understand how they're dealing with this call for the removal of Dr. Isha. Because for me, that's a concern. I've seen the press briefing, and the release of CW, and I don't expect you to respond, Dr. Nishan, because it affects you. But I would like to hope that either the DM or the minister will be here, because that should be engaged by the executive with the unions, so that we try and make sure that there's sort of conducive environment for you to work. Let me give you time to respond. If there's a need for us to come back on issues, we'll come back. Let's see how far you go.
Thank you, Chair. I will start, I'll try and pick on those that I feel that I can answer. The team will also answer some of the issues. And we are really thankful for the opportunity. In the opening comment, and the first question was appreciating the stability, because that was at the heart of the mandate that I was given by the minister, to say the first important issue is to stabilize the post office and deal with the labor disruptions and the labor unrest that we were having. Unfortunately, it's in the nature of the history of the post office that we actually dealing with 10 years of problems. And it has, as the CEO indicated earlier on, resulted in a number of formations within the unions themselves. And therefore, a lot of what we're also dealing with is competition amongst themselves, jostling for recognition by the potential members to be the best at representing themselves, them as unions. And I want to highlight that that's one of the issues that impact a lot on the numbers in terms of representation by the members of the members, because it's very unstable and it's very much in flux, and it seems to have been the case over a period of time. On an ongoing basis, unions claiming that our members tell us that you deduct money for a wrong union, and then you do that to try and fix it. The other union also complains. So it's a very, very problematic situation at the moment. With respect to board, it is something that is also very evident to me that the situation was spiraling out of control. Normally, when you see a board that starts to meet that often, it says that it's no longer having a helicopter view. It actually is lost in the bush, if I may say that. So it was one of the problems. I don't have a mandate to really go and look at what were they doing, what was wrong with that. But the investigations are conducted mainly by the SIU, and they have asked a number of board members, not just the previous board, but I think they've gone back two or three boards going back, I think from 2010, if I can be reminded. And we have had a lot of requests from them for information that has been provided so that they can answer to the SIU on a number of things that have been looked at. Unfortunately, the process is also taking quite some time. I personally had several engagements with Dr. Soni with an attempt to say, can we please speed it up? Because as you will appreciate it, employees don't see a difference between us. So they say to me, until you bring us those reports, don't come and talk to us. So it does impact on the work that we're doing in that regard. And I also appreciate that for the employees, it actually is quite an important issue, because when they see a problem at the top and then see themselves having to suffer some of the consequences, it is not something that is viewed as fair. So it's really a balancing act. We have encouraged the SIU, and they have promised they will do their best, but they are not committing to a date, and they are indicating that they will be talking to the presidency about it. So from that respect, I also am waiting like all of us and hoping I try as much as I can, and I've pointed them to some of the issues that I think are going to be extremely important that they be dealt with, starting at the level of the board. I also agree that the whole issue of effective oversight of organizations, talking about oversight exercised by the boards from a provision of leadership, is a very important issue. I personally spend a lot of time as a trainer on corporate governance with the Institute of Directors, talking to these issues, and I'm experiencing firsthand example what actually happens when the process goes wrong. The reference that I made to the consultants, maybe I wasn't clear enough. I was saying that we ended up taking a group that had done work at SABO in 2013. 2013 was to review work by all consultants that had been engaged by SAPO over 10 years. We felt they then bring a lot of knowledge and understanding, because one of the things that is very evident to myself and to many other people, including the acting group CEO, is SAPO is not short of ideas, and I'm sure that is why you're saying, you know what, we've had all of this time and again, and that worries me, because I've not even talked to you about the turnaround as we are still finalizing it. So I'm now worried that when I come here, you'll be saying to me, we've had all of this, and it actually has been there. I mean, I've been to customers very recently, one very large retailer, who seems to have, as a chief executive, a lot of experience. In fact, he's a personal friend to somebody that turned around the German post office. He's a family friend to the current CEO of UK Post. And he had worked with him, with her in Canada. And he was in retail, she was in the post. And they had actually done this concept of a store in a store, where you go to an existing retailer and you put in a post office. He says 2 years ago the post office came here with the same request, and I was very excited. We spent a lot of time. We actually identified stores where we could actually establish post offices within our shops, and then the post office just lost interest. In fact, as a matter of fact, this morning when I was asking the group CEO, why are we coming across all of these issues? Where you have an idea, you actually try and investigate it, you find, no, this has been looked at before. But one thing that can't be explained is, why was it abandoned? Why was it not carried through? Why was it not implemented? And again, it talks to oversight. It talks to following things through and making sure, because the difference is made at implementation, we all know that. Having an idea that's not implemented doesn't help much. But we do seem to have that as a major, major problem. Actually, it's one of the things that we are currently looking at, because of the implementation plan that we now have to develop, to say it's one thing to put a plan on paper, but how do we make sure it gets implemented? And I'm very confident in my mind it will start with the quality of the board that's going to be appointed to the post office. We have to make sure we have people that actually are good implementers that follow things through. So there's a myriad of those examples. In that particular example, the post office was nowhere to be found, according to him, for a year. And then after a year, they came back and said, how can we implement this? And they said, well, you wasted our time a year ago. We're no longer interested. We identified all of these shops. We were prepared to go with you and implement. And that's how it collapsed. So that's one of the major issues with the turnaround. Yes, we've got a lot of ideas of turnaround, and they're not all going to happen next month, and I need to caution on that. For instance, when you look at mail, because there was a question of, do we have ideas on turnaround, are we going to... When you look at mail, at the moment, we're moving a lot of paper around the country, and we've got... The structure of the post office is very internally focused. So we've got, you give us the mail, and you let us do what we do with it. And that's not only the post office. When I joined the railway at the turn of the century, it was exactly the same structure. I'm not trying to tell my age. It was exactly the same structure. So you give it to us. So for instance, if you're sending a letter from Cape Town, say, to Nelspruit, it will go to Cape Mail, we'll sort it at Cape Mail. It will go to Tswane Mail in that case, we'll sort it at Tswane Mail. And then it goes to Nelspruit, the depot, before we actually move it to the post office, before we actually deliver it to a post box. So you've got like four handling points. And there's no need to get to a level of handling each letter so many times if we are able to sort it up front. Now, you'll also say we've heard about pre-sorting before. But the truth of the matter is that 98% of our revenue is derived from business and government. Business and government don't go and put letters in red post boxes around town. we get them from bulk mailers that they've employed to actually print them for business and mail. So at some point, that existed in the form of data. One of the opportunities that lie ahead is to have that data. If it's for Nelspruit, printed at Nelspruit. If it's for Durban, printed in Durban. So instead of moving letters around, move data around. And that's one of the things that the post office hasn't facilitated. We have a small experiment on that, but it hasn't grown also because there isn't a lot of capital. And one of the things that we've said is we can't wait for us to have capital. You have to partner with other entities that have an interest so that they put machines to print in their spread and put machines to print right around the country so that when a business wants bills printed, you then send the data to the area where that post is going and print it as close as possible. What that does, because I've also come across situations where people are saying, well, what then happens to all of the people in your mail sorting centers? It opens up a huge amount of capacity for handling parcels, for handling goods. What has happened in the post office is that people like street services that we're talking about, people like courier services, have their own assets, which is a huge investment. And most of their assets, because they came in when the post office no longer had money to buy buildings, are now rented from other people, instead of using the same locations like Vespos. So when you go to Vespos or Tswaneme, you see a bulk of what they handle there is letters, because there is no room for them to handle parcels. Now, these days, whilst we say there's digitization, yes, may be taking work from the letters, but it's creating a huge industry in terms of online shops. It is possible now to create a link that allows a small entrepreneur in Eastern Cape, KwaZulu-Natal, Limpopo, to actually trade their goods throughout the globe on online shops. Now, those are the things that the post office should be facilitating, because they then create opportunities for handling those goods. If you look at other post offices across the world, it is not unheard of to have in areas like sorting centers that we have here, handling of fridges, televisions, high value goods. One, the margins are very good when you handle that, and two, there is no ability yet, I'm not saying it will never be there, to actually digitize the fridge. So you are in a business that you can invest for a long run, because when a fridge is bought, it will always have to be delivered. When a television is bought, it will always have to be delivered. Although a friend of mine told me in future we will print them at home as well, but I haven't seen that, so I can't talk to it yet. So there is therefore opportunities to diversify our revenue streams. But the trick is to do so without incurring more costs, without utilizing new properties. And that's at the heart of what we are looking at. To say, if mail is suffering from digitization, let us be the ones that digitize it. But then bring in other elements of logistics into the assets that we have. In my view, when you look at Vespos as an example, it could be a very good distribution center for retail. If you look at the competitiveness of retail, large retailers, one of the areas where they make themselves a lot more competitive compared to smaller retailers is these distribution centers, where you see trucks that are actually carrying the right stock for where they are going to deliver, and that's created in their own retail center, instead of having all the manufacturers bringing stuff to each of the shops, because they cause queues, they block the shops. So you get them to your distribution center, you package at the distribution center ready for the shop, so that when you get to the shop, you actually offload the truck into the shelves directly. Now, we could also get into the business of doing that for medium scale and even small scale retailers to create competitiveness for them, so that they are as competitive as the large retailers. So I am not convinced that there isn't enough in the market for the post office to grow. We just need to change our mindset. We just need to focus on the right thing. Of course, that will take a time. And therefore, the first step will be to make what we do now beyond that, most of the post offices that we've looked at that are very successful have a very good product mix between financial services, logistics, e-business or electronic digital business, and mail. The ones that have a mix like us, like the U.S. Post, have as many problems as ourselves. We've actually benchmarked ourselves against them. They have too many casual workers. They have too much property. They are loss-making. They have all sorts of problems that you see in us. You see in them. The only difference is they don't have labor relations disruptions like we have, and their turnaround strategy is actually being implemented. That's the U.S. If you look at the Italian Post, for instance, Italian Post is 82% financial services in revenue and only 15% mail, whereas we are 65% mail and financial services, at least with us, is 13%. The U.S. Post has no financial services, and that therefore tells you that the way that you construct the business and the mix of the business actually matters in terms of what you can do. And therefore, we need to grow logistics, we need to grow e-business, and we need financial services that is strong and that has grown. And therefore, in the turnaround, we will make sure that organizational design is actually put in place. So yes, implementation is going to be very important in taking us forward. You talked to the issue of casuals fired as a result of the strike. I couldn't follow that very well. Property, yes, we've done the audit. We've audited all our properties. We have 466 title deeds and 446 actual properties. Because in some cases, you've got properties that are sitting on two title deeds. We've identified the dilapidated ones, we've identified the vacant ones, we've identified the prime ones, we've identified the ones that we are using. We are looking at options in terms of what to do with the property portfolio to generate some funding that will help us close some of the funding gap. I am not in a position to talk about it in full today, but when we come back to discuss the turnaround plan, it will be one of the areas that are at the heart of what we want to do. We do have to make sure that property also is in a position to sweat, to work, to produce. One of the problems we have at the post office with property is that there's been a trend, it seems to have started around 2010, I think 2009, 2010, where for some reason post office felt, you know, you have to be in a shopping mall to get people to send a letter. So they abandoned their own buildings. Some just across the road from those shopping malls or a corner or whatever. And a lot of those buildings are lying idle and they are getting dilapidated. And that's one of the things that has come out of the audit that we are actually working on. So some of the post offices, we will have to retain them to operate from the sub buildings that they vacated. But the problem with that is that you're now sitting in a contract, in a disagreement with someone. So you can't now just up and leave because he will then hold you to the agreement. And therefore, the timing of that, again, will cause it to be phased in. So at the moment, my view is the turnaround plan that we'll come up with will need at least 18 months for implementation. But there are steps that it will have to get to over a period of 2 to 3 years. So there will be a first phase that needs 18 months, but there will be other things that can be done that will lead us to develop beyond that. I have touched on the investigations and the SIU and the encouragement that we give them, and would really appreciate assistance also from the committee. In fact, when I looked at the questions that the committee had sent for some of the things that we needed to answer to, I called the advocate Sonia and said to him, look, the committee wants to know about these investigations, and I really think it needs to be. And he said he would welcome a question or an opportunity to come and engage yourself. And so I'm glad to hear that you have had him, because I also need him to assist me in that particular regard. There is an issue with automation, and yes, you touched on the fact that sometimes you see machines, but they are not being used, and there is a handling through labor. Now, I'm not sure if all of it is answered by what I've seen, but I've come across situations at the post office where these machines are maintained by the equipment manufacturers. There has been no transfer of skills to post office workers. So they've got this, they call it a maintenance contract. So Siemens and those organizations that supply the machines will then have people that are there at the post office to maintain the machine. And with the problems of financials of the post office, what has been happening is that they would be saying, no, you owe us for spare parts that you bought at this time, so we're not going to supply you with spare parts. And one of the problems in that contract, and we've got a number of these problems in the contracting, is that the technicians that are sitting in the operating center of the post office are actually paid for being there. They're not paid for the uptime of the machine, because their purpose, therefore, is to keep the machine uptime, so that it doesn't, you don't have a lot of downtime. But when the supplier is not giving the specs, therefore you end up paying a person from the supplier who is unable to repair the machine because you owe their employer money for the spares, and it creates a huge problem. So that's one of the things that I've come across that has to change. We are now renegotiating bulk of the contracts that we found in the post office, and that's one of the issues that are going to start showing up. Maybe sometimes people will run to the media and you may expect to read about it, because we are going to a lot of these suppliers and saying, this the post office cannot afford, this the post office cannot continue with, we've got to do a different contract. And unfortunately, some of them, we're so dependent on them, because if they've given you their machine, they only them knows what is going on inside of that machine, and therefore you can't be adversarial in your approach in forcing them to change, and therefore it's going to take time. But we are trying to say to them, look, if the post office collapses and can't work, it doesn't help you either, and therefore you have to help us to keep it going. So that's part of what we are going through. I think I've touched on the issue of diversification of revenue streams. So I'm not going to touch that, because I know there's a lot of work that we are doing in that area. I can just make sure the business model, I've tried to talk very briefly to that, but it really is in the mix of your revenue streams, and we have to grow financial services. We have to grow, and financial services is more than banking. And that's the other point, because post office has tended to look at it more from a bank, post-bank perspective. One of the things that we are looking at is the financial services market in its broader sense, and we are looking at what are the products that the post office can deliver, in particular to rural areas. There's a bit more that we'll have to come back on in as far as the business model is concerned, because some of the data, as it's been analyzed previously, we have slightly different views. Maybe let me touch on that. I mean, there's a huge view, Chairperson, on USOs being in the rural areas. I'm not saying that because I come from the rural areas, but it's not necessarily true. We've actually done a very interesting analysis of your top 20 branches of the post office and your bottom 20 branches of the post office. Just to give you an indication, we've got categories of branches, and it talks to services, it talks to number of staff, it talks to location and all sorts of other things. And there are category A's. The category A's will be like in your metropolis, high density areas, affluent areas, and it goes all the way to category C, which would be more vanilla essence type operation. The staffing is about 4 people because of the size of the area that you occupy and all of that. In the majority of the bottom 20 are your affluent post offices. Presta, for instance, Sanchin, those areas. Yes. Now, then you ask yourself, where are we losing money? Because that's where you're paying high rent. That's where you're occupying very expensive floor space compared to... and there are also some that I think just because we own the buildings look like they are profitable. But when you really look at the cost of being where you are, like we would have a post office in the beachfront, you know, I don't think you need a beach to post a letter. So that's very expensive property space that will be occupying the chair. So we are looking at all of that as well. But the issue of USOs is a very important one. What I noticed though is that the post office through the regulator was focused on compliance a lot more than on sustainability. And I think that's where the mind shift needs to take place, where when we open a branch, we've got to understand the cost of having that branch in its lifetime. We've got to understand the cost of establishment, which is what got subsidized most of the time, and not the operating cost. In retail, normally you would have in your model what tells you how long does it take for each shop that is opened to become profitable and how much you need to support. And that normally tells you how many shops can you take on an ongoing basis. So you can't just go and open 100 shops because they will all not be profitable for the first 2 years, and therefore if you train your so you do it in steps that allow you to balance your profitability. And I think we need a model of that nature, and that's one of the things that we are working on in terms of the post office, to work out exactly how much can we take on. But we also, as the post office, need to empower other people. One of the things that we haven't done as much, it's there in our model, but it can grow quite significantly, is to actually offer postal services, particularly through small retailers in formal areas and in some of the peri-urban areas. There's a lot of retailing that is taking place there, and there's no postal services that is provided through those retailers. And I think there's a lot of opportunity to actually do that through those retailers. That was the business model. The CEO issue, Andrew is helping me here because I'm slow.
What's the CEO issue?
That's the one you want me to touch upon. Yes. The process had just started when I arrived. There was an investigation that was conducted by an external law firm, and they gave us a report on the 19th of December. We then looked at the report and compiled some disciplinary charges based on the outcome of the report. And that disciplinary process started middle of January. Yes, Chair, it's a very difficult issue, particularly at those levels, because you also don't run the disciplinary hearing using internal resources, because the CEO is the most senior person in the organization. There's nobody who can chair his hearing above him. So we have had to use an external chairperson who at the time of appointment was just finishing his term as an acting judge in the labor court, and therefore had a few other things that needed to complete. The date we have from them is up to the 25th of April as we sit. Now, it also depends on how many witnesses get called and how many witnesses don't get called. We don't expect it to go beyond that date, but we're doing everything possible. I actually had a meeting with the initiator, which is also an external lawyer, last week, to say to him, we need to get more dates. So if we get more dates between now and the 25th of April, that gives us more assurance that we can actually have a sitting. Now, in the contract of the CEO as well, he was also allowed to be represented by an external lawyer. So you have to compare all of those diaries. His representative, the chairperson of the hearing, who also all have different things that they are running. So I can't promise you we will do it before the 25th of April. paper, but we're doing everything possible to get it completed before then. I must say from his side and his lawyer's side, they've been quite cooperative. The only time that they had a problem with this was in the month of March, but the other times it was the chairman of the hearing that actually delayed us in that regard. But it is progressing, and I'm hopeful that it will complete in time. I want to just touch on IT, because the IT issue is also very important, because there's a lot of investment required to fix the IT of the post office. So one of the things we've done is exactly what I talked about earlier on, to say, instead of the post office trying to be everything and then failing dismally, we need to partner. So we've actually engaged Telkom in that regard, and we're doing a lot of work with Telkom, because Telkom is already into the business of running IT networks. And therefore, we felt it would not help for SACO to also go and try and upgrade. One of the projects that we found in SACO was the upgrade of the IT network. The other project was disaster recovery, where we need to host our data center and have backup somewhere else, because at the moment the backup was in the same building as the actual system itself, which doesn't help, because if you have a disaster in that building, you lose both your main network and your backup. So we are actually working through that with Telkom, and that is the project that is developing. We are experiencing some hiccups with our IT in the meantime, but we hope that by the time it really gets worse, it will be beyond the time that Telkom has taken up the function in as far as SACO is concerned. But by the time we come here with a turnaround strategy, we'll have facts and figures. We're also doing something different on the backflip side of that. We are actually working with Telkom to create broadband capacity in all our posts and post offices. Because if we do that, we're going to be able to increase our service offering. So we've actually discussed with them that they'll provide LTE inside all our post offices, and they'll put 3G connectivity outside on a radius of 10 kilometers. And I think our cooperation is going to also help both organizations. One, we'll be able to offer better products, more reliable services, but we'll also be in a position to help Telkom gain some revenues out of that, because at the moment they're also trying to establish their own retail shops, which is mostly a duplication of the network that we already have. Thanks,
Thank you, Dr. Shaheen, please just respond to the Postbank issue. Where will Postbank get the balance of the required funding?
Thank you, Honourable Members and Chairperson. It was...
Sorry.
Okay, thank you. There was 481 million rand allocated in the budget vote. The first tranche of funding was for 205 million, which we've already received. The next tranche is being received in the next financial year. We've started the processes internally and with DTPS and National Treasury to request the next tranche of 252 million. Then there's a final tranche, I think, which goes up to about 25 million. So we do expect to get the next tranche in beginning of April, because our financial year ends 31 March.
Your annual report says that another funding will come from Postbank. That's the question I asked. In your annual report, I think it's page 7, under the acting good chief executive officer's report, because it says that, maybe I can read, the Postbank corporatization process has further been enabled through funding of 401 million that has been allocated by the National Treasury over the medium term. The balance of the investment in corporatization will be funded by Postbank.
Okay, my apologies. Let me clarify. Thank you, Chair. What we said is the 481 million was through National Treasury. The balance would be through the profits of Postbank. So Postbank currently is a profitable division. It has been generating profits, and it has a ring-fenced balance sheet for the benefit of depositors, which SACO has never, ever accessed. Now, what the agreement with National Treasury was is that they would make up a shortfall so that we don't go into a loss situation. So the balance of the cost that we need to incur will come from our own internally generated profits within Postbank.
Thank you, Shaheen. Lenny, if you could just respond to the adverse opinion question.
Thank you. In terms of the adverse for this opinion, there's two parts. One, where the external auditors say they cannot place any reliance on the financial statements, because the financial statements do not actually represent the position of the company. But in Sapo case, that wasn't the case. The second part was the growing concern. You know, where an organization in the foreseeable future cannot meet its obligations when they become due. And that was the challenge on Sapo side, is that it could not, the intent of reject the balance sheet of Sapo and strip out Postbank assets of 6.4 billion rand, what has happened is the current assets exceed the current liabilities and do not have sufficient funds to meet its obligations. And therefore, we require a guarantee. And I think maybe it's important to emphasize, the guarantee we got is just a guarantee. It's no funding. Even the shortfall in terms of the overdraft facility of 230 million rand, it's not a funding mechanism, it's a guarantee that in case something happens, National Treasury would have the footing. But who is coming out of conditions? And same thing with a 1.67 billion rand guarantee to assure the creditors that SAPO is financially solvent and can meet its obligations. There is a need the National Treasury will support SAPO. So it's more a letter of comfort, but it's not a funding mechanism. So there's no money transferred to SAPO. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I think quite a few of the other questions I'm required to respond. Starting with the DTT, there was a question regarding whether the staff are trained. Yes, the staff are trained. As you reported earlier on, as far as DTT is concerned, SAPO is very ready for this process, and so our staff both in peri urban and rural areas have been trained and are awaiting for the rollout of DTT. Next question related to copiers and faxing machines. Clearly this is something we would like to ensure that we have a full service post office wherever is possible. You will note that faxing and copying is one of the profitable lines that we used to have in our retail branches, and we would like to continue that. As Dr. Rishawa has mentioned, sometimes it's just a question of have you paid the supplier who comes and fixes these copiers, and that's where we have some challenges. But once we are stable, you will find that a lot of these post offices will have all of these services. Oversight issues, ma'am, you will recall that you had asked us to provide reports for all the questions that you had raised, and we did do so. So that's why we just listed them. We were hoping that if there were questions you might raise, but each of those matters, you'll be happy to know we answer them quite comprehensively in the reports that were given to the Secretariat of the Committee. The issue of the ICASA license and the terms of that license, I think members will know that we've been engaging with ICASA around how we can perhaps minimize the stringency of those requirements. Because, for example, as Dr. Lushaba has pointed out, the fascination, if you like, was with compliance. Please roll out 50 post offices. You roll out 50 post offices. As to whether those post offices will be viable and how they will be funded was never really part of the picture. So in this ensuing year, we've agreed with the ICASA that first we will suspend any further rollouts until we've done a further analysis of what we actually have as post offices. And then once we've done that together with the ICASA, we will then look at what a needs analysis-based approach that says we do see the need there and therefore you can roll out a post office. We are hoping that that will be coupled with also the financing side. Because if it's a post office which we both deem to be unviable property-wise, then of course we expect that either, well, not the ICASA, but at least the government should be able to step in and say, well, we will give you what is required to keep that post office operational. Part of what we've been doing, of course, is, as again Dr. Lushaba has mentioned, looking at what we're calling a multi-channel strategy. So in other words, we don't have to roll out a post office. If there's a retailer in that area, we can go in and put a post office inside that retailer, as opposed to us actually rolling out a physical post office. We've, in the last year as well, agreed with ICASA that where we produce mobile units, these will be considered also as postal points of presence. And we've produced, I think, 5 so far in this year, and we will continue to produce some more, particularly in areas like Northern Cape and Eastern Cape, where the distances are quite prohibitive. There's a question of unions and how we're going to explain the bigger picture. Indeed, that has been, excuse me, that has been the real challenge. Clearly, unions come into the negotiations with the notion that we are
purely focused on what's good for our members. But we've made it clear that, in fact, what is good for their members is the survival of the South African Post Office. And to that extent, we have engaged them, together with a process which is being assisted by the CCMA, to start talking about the labor relations environment at the South African Post Office. What will it take to get trust on both sides to start working together to ensure the survival of the Post Office? We've even talked around issues, for example, of financial literacy for the union, so that as we present financials, there is a good understanding of what those financials actually represent. So we are actively engaged in that process. Honorable Shin asked the question, when do we expect income from DDT? As we stand, Honorable Shin, we are really just waiting for USASA to keep going. We are more than ready. And when we look at the number, we are more than eager for that income to start coming in, because we are looking at something like 992 million. So that would be a huge, nice big income stream for us. So we are very eager for it to start as soon as possible. Let's see if there's something else. There are a few reports that we must give to you as indicated. One was the learning and development, properly broken down. We will make sure that that is provided. There's the analysis of the property portfolio, because in the oversight, what we were requested to provide was just a list of all the properties which we then did. But I think what the chair is asking for now is a much more robust analysis of that portfolio. And Dr. Lushaba had mentioned that, in fact, an audit has been done. So we will provide that report to you very soon after we leave here. The question of the targets on the strategic plan, we've noted that, ma'am, and we'll rectify that, and we'll make sure that they will always be tied in together. Okay, I think, the last question, ma'am, related to unions and the membership and the audit of the members of the unions. This is something we've been trying to get going and getting even an independent party like KPMG to come into the post office and audit union membership. We last did this, I believe, in 2012 when we had Sapawu coming on board. But with the advent of DIPAKU coming on board and slight changes in the recognition agreements, and we now even have a further union that is registered in the post office called IKUSA, it has become imperative. It has become imperative that we do this audit, because half the fights we have with unions are really about this matter, where they keep saying, no, but you're stealing my members and giving to this person, and this one says, no, you are not taking the correct amount for my people to give to me, etc. So as a matter of urgency, this is an audit that needs to be conducted so that we can agree whose members are who, but most importantly, we need to renegotiate our recognition agreements with all the unions so that we have similar recognition agreements across all unions and we understand what the threshold for recognition will be. Thank you, ma'am.
Thank you, TPS. Thank you from the DTPS, having listened to also the responses that the post office
produced yourself.
Thank you. Renee Lelanga, Chief Director, Postal Oversight within the DTPS. And
thank you, Chair. Thank you, Chair. Honorable Chair and honorable members. My name is Michael Engineer, Chief Director in the SOE Governance Unit.
Thank you. We thank you for the opportunity to share with you some of the interventions that the department has shared. When I joined the department like 8 months ago, some of the people were like saying, why are you going for postal oversight? It's a dead horse. And my response was that I believe in resurrection power. And when I got to the post office, when I joined the department, then I realized that there were more challenges at hand. But what made the job more bearable was taking recognition that from senior leadership as highest minister,
as the Deputy Minister and the DG, the issues of the post office are taken very seriously, and there is commitment from that top level to make sure that the issues are addressed. SAPO has touched on a lot of issues, especially the challenges that they have experienced. What has been some of the challenges? Obviously, the financial performance. I don't want to reiterate most of the challenges that they have, but obviously we realized that there were the deteriorating financial performance was a concern, that the assets were not being fully used optimally. Obviously, there were lots of issues with the governance issues. As the committee may recall, so Minister engaged even the former board of the post office in addressing those issues that were raised. I mean, there were issues raised, for example, with regard to the number of meetings that the South African post office held. So compounded with a lot of other issues that were at stake, which revealed that there were systematic and structural issues within the post office, and there were also reliance on overdrafts, there were lots of issues, for example, with unfunded USO and all of that. As the oversight, we have engaged the post office on the issues and identifying that some of those issues were more underlying, they needed more, like something like long-term to be addressed. Minister immediately charged to the then board of the post office to come up with a strategic turnaround plan. And things developed to the point where there was also the intervention of Dr. Lishaba, which is very pleasing to hear the feedback of the intervention. So what the department also did was to make sure that there was that intervention of the administration team. And obviously, I think some time back, we would recognize that there were issues where the post office wasn't being supported on the overdraft. So the department immediately engaged with the National Treasury, which is what saw the eventually supporting the approval of the overdraft limit to the 320. And we have been working jointly with the National Treasury in ensuring that SAPO is supported. I think the administrator touched on the 270 million guarantee that was guaranteed. What happens in terms of the reporting, obviously the post office will approach us as the oversight, and then in terms of the consultation that needs to take place with the Minister of Finance, then the Minister would facilitate that process. And we know there were challenges with the signing of the annual report, where I think the acting CEO of SAPO touched on the issues about the going concern issues that were raised by the auditors and all of that. So we have simultaneously engaged with the National Treasury again and also involving the post office to make sure that SAPO was granted that guarantee. There were talks in the presentation of the post office where they were talking about the quick wins, they were also talking about the long-term wins. So when SAPO was given the guarantee, obviously it wasn't like a blank check. So as the oversight, there are some conditions that we're monitoring just to make sure that there is a progress. So as a result, the turnaround plan that has been developed, we're also looking at what can be done quickly. One of the main issues that we recognized was with regard to the universal service obligation, which was not funded. And the department set up a committee, like a joint committee, where the post office was engaged, the National Treasury was engaged, and the ICASA was engaged. But obviously we respected the independence of the ICASA. As the outcome of that policy, SAPO then was advised, and then they did a proposal, which was then put in ICASA to see if some of the regulatory obligation could be relaxed. This is where Mr. Longongo spoke about some of the, what is it called, the targets that were revised in terms of the address rollouts. And also in terms of the USO, if you may recall previously, we were talking about the universal service obligation where the post office would say, for example, 1 to 10,000 inhabitants over 18 years. So as a result of that intervention, so the regulator has come to the board where those targets have now been reduced to cover 1 to 15 years instead of 18 years. So there's a whole series of other interventions that were taken, had to be done. Sapo, at the same time, was also tasked to look at the leadership issues. Some of the conditions have been, for example, when the intervention team was put in place, it wasn't also like a blank check. It was where there were certain conditions that were put in place to say that one of the, for example, to make the effectiveness of the intervention was that they would have to come up with a turnaround plan. Taking into account that there were some work that was already initiated with the then board and the leadership team, was to say that when the intervention team come into play, they would also look at some of those work that were done, just to make sure that they stress test the work that has been done, so that at the end of the day, when the turnaround can come, is something that can be effective. Like Dr. Lishabo mentioned about, it's not just giving a whole lot of ideas, but it is something that can be workable. On the issues of I think there were also issues around, it's a lot of issues coming through my head. There were issues also with regard to the vacancy rate. So SAPO was also tough to say that they need to come up with mechanisms where, for example, key positions can be targeted, can be filled. But we're also working at the backdrop of issues that the entity does not have enough funding at the moment. So hence, when the turnaround plan is developed, we expect that it will also have what do you call, like short-term, medium, long-term, what is workable given the challenges at SAPO. The other issue which was equally pressing was with regard to the unstable labor environment. And what the department managed to do under the leadership of the ministry, taking into account that at a time the communication, there was broken trust, broken communication between SAPO and the management and the unions and the separate lines. So Minister then established that leadership forum at SAPO, which basically the main aim was to make sure that at least the communication, communication lines are being reestablished at SAPO, where there can be negotiations and all of that. So as a result of that forum, so there has been also commitment from SAPO management to say that even other forums, like your buying council and all that, that they will then now be re-established. So it's something that at an oversight level we have been monitoring. There was also concern with the post bank because SAPO indicated that it was taking longer. So what the department done as part of the oversight through the leadership of the minister, even the deputy minister up to the DG, including the oversight branch, what has happened was to really get to the core of what the main issues are in terms of SAPO being at least authorization to establish the bank. So through the intervention of the minister, we have re-engaged the relevant stakeholders, National Treasury. We have also had engagements with the Reserve Bank just to make sure that at least we unpack what are the dependencies that are blocking the process. So the dependencies that have been identified, we are working on them. We have a working team that is comprised of the department, National Treasury, and SAPO, where we're monitoring progress in that area so that if there are any bottlenecks, they are addressed. And then some of the dependencies, for example, is the appointment of the board. So it's to ensure that the board that is put in place is just having the board, it's not just having the board for the sake of having the board, but to make sure that there are free and proper assessment processes that are required by the Banks Act, where those requirements are met. So I'm just what I'm trying to put to put to the committee is that there is, while there's this intervention and issues have been addressed, there are other processes that as a department we have put in place just to make sure that work is being done. And we are monitoring very closely the development of the turnaround plan just to make sure that the commitment that is put in place there, they would be complied with. And then we have also identified, as Dr. Lishama mentioned earlier, with regard to the USO branches. Through those engagements that we've been having, we have also said that going forward, we also need to make a clear distinction in terms of what is a loss-making post office, what is the USO. So those are work in progress, but we do understand the challenges at hand, but in numerous occasions we have also, as I indicated, I think I touched on the joint working teams that are taking place, engagement with relevant stakeholders, and the guarantees that we have touched on. I'm not sure, Michael. And then with regards to the oversight as well, the investigations, as the committee may recall, the minister initiated those investigations which are ongoing. We are also looking forward to make sure that the investigations that have been done by the SAU public protector, that the outcomes and the findings, that appropriate steps are put in place to make sure that there's consequence management as the committee has requested.
Melak, you have not answered my question.
Yeah.
My question is, what is the role of SOE in it? You've explained activities, that's not what I'm looking for. Can I just finish? You've explained activities, that's not what I'm looking for. I want to know the role of SOE unit. And I'll come, for example, if my understanding is correct. Before the tabling of this report, SOE unit needs to have signed it off together with the minister. I pick up discrepancies in the report. The second issue is the issue of post office found itself where it is today. Where was SOE unit? So that's something you have not answered my question. You're talking about a lot of activities and somehow selectively starting where the intervention of Dr. Lisha. The Department of Communication, which had SOE unit, now DTPS existed since then, and when the programs of post office started, the department existed. Because I don't want to, that's why I'm asking you your responsibility and your role. And you know, during your annual report, I don't know if you were here or it was your CDGs, but during the annual report, when the SOE unit put that they have achieved the target, I said we don't accept it. The SOE unit has not achieved its target. And we said it's a misrepresentation of the annual report of DTPS. And we are trying to sort it out.
Thank you, Chair. My name is Mackenzie, I'm the Chief Director of the SOE Government Farm. Chair, our role as the SOE oversight committee is to help the government or the minister, as represented by the shareholder representative in the minister, to manage its interest in the SOE entities in terms of the entities executing their public mandate and ensuring that the execution is achieved in an efficient way. So that essentially or primarily is achieved by us monitoring the board, which, because the board has got its responsibility to control the entity and direct it properly. So we monitor, we have oversight over the board through various legislation, like the pieces of legislation like the PFMA and the Companies Act and the founding legislation relating to the entities or the entity. And more specifically or more practically through the governance frameworks like the King III report on corporate governance and the public sector protocol on corporate governance. The Companies Act and the PFMA in relation to the board really have its core in terms of making placing a duty on the board to act in terms of the fiduciary duties which have been referred here of the board being to act in the best interest of the entity and to exercise due proper and due diligence and care in exercising those their duties. So we, as the unit, the oversight unit, we use this legislation because the directors, for them to show that they have executed this duties, oversight, these very duties, they need to take certain processes or steps, and these steps are provided for in these legislations and governance frameworks. So we use these frameworks for us to monitor their actions, and we request reports. We have meetings. We have quarterly performance reports. We have a shareholder compact, which is our key agreement with the board in terms of it's also required by the treasury regulations, primarily for us as the shareholder to agree with the entities in terms of performance targets. But we also take it further in terms of putting requirements in place in the shareholders agreement in terms of governance processes that we need to see the board implementing for them to be able to offer for there to be reasonable assurance that they will be able to achieve the performance of the targets that have been put in place that have been agreed. So those processes that we have include quarterly performance reporting by the units by the entities, as well as our own monitoring processes in terms of governance, like how often the board meets and so on and so on, and checking in terms of their meetings. For instance, resolutions, are they board meetings according to the strategic plan in terms of them providing guidance to government, to executive management, in terms of how to in terms of planning and achieving and monitoring that the progress relating to the executives achieving those objectives, and various other mechanisms that we have that we put in place, and then we advise minister on our interactions and then progress in terms of achieving those objectives. It is our desire to be able to have any warning mechanisms in place, and we want to do that going forward. But the key challenge in the past has been that the department was undercapacitated in the sense that the SOE oversight unit was for the past years, because we're referring here to SAPO having began to have these difficulties in 2008. So then, this was a chief directorate, which was a small unit to oversee the number of entities that the department has oversight responsibilities over. But now, it is now a branch, which is incapacitated in terms of skill, not just the numbers, but skill. And that process is going forward, and it's going on, and it will soon be reach a position which will be optimal for there to be effective monitoring. Chair. Thank you.
One last question from you guys. Have all the entities with the department signed memorandum of incorporation?
Yes, Chair.
Including SAPA?
Yes, Chair. I think maybe you say this.
Memorandum of incorporation.
Yes, every entity has got a memorandum of incorporation, and the ones that the entities that have just joined the department being properly in SACO and CETA are still to be finalized, which is basically the constitution of the entities. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. Any follow-up questions, members? I'm going to take just one round, one question each, or comment quickly, so that we are able to finish. We still have another agenda item that we need to discuss. So my target is that by 12, all the discussion around supplements to be done. Honorable Shin, Honorable McKenzie, Honorable Killian, Honorable Sotis.
Thank you, Chairperson. My question is to Dr. Sabo about, you said that your IT refreshment program or whatever was going to be done by Telkom. Can you please tell me what that cost is and why you chose Telkom, and if you're going to be going to an open tender process, or whether this is an in-family agreement? Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. Just two small questions. The one is on accounts in the post bank. Sorry, this is just a follow-up, something I forgot earlier on. Accounts in the post bank, talking about accounts getting overdrawn. How can you do that in post bank? How can you do that with savings accounts, given that you're not a lending operator? If you could just answer that for me. And then, Chairperson, the turnaround plan I see on the program is scheduled for the 15th of March. But clearly we're going to run out of time. It would be absolutely critical for us to engage with that, and I'd be very, very interested to see it. So is there any chance we can accommodate it around that time? Thank you, Chair.
I know, I'm sorry, Chairperson, but it's very important, as you know.
Well, Chair.
Thank you, Chairperson. I just wanted to ask the post office on page 84 of the annual report. There is a report on fraud losses during the past financial year, and compared to the previous year, there is effectively a 300% increase. Now, what is of a particular concern was that you were, it states here that a total reported loss of $5 million was committed at a retail outlet in the northern region, and half of the fraud, reported fraud, and that was in the northern region over a period of 5 years, banking fraud. Can you please just indicate what interventions were made there? It's part of the package that is currently being investigated, and have you taken the necessary steps to stop this? Thank you.
Honourable Sotis.
Thank you, Chair. I would like to make a follow-up on the training of personnel. The answer was yes. But now the question is, do you monitor the effectiveness of the training to ensure that there is, you know, a qualitative capacity and not just measure compliance that people have been trained and they still cannot deliver? Do you monitor that and ensure that people are able to deliver what they're supposed to deliver?
Just too quickly, there was an issue on SIU investigation. We were approached by SIU or myself as the committee chair to provide some evidence in light of the investigation. That was in January. The last interaction with SIU, we were asked for, we did provide the presentation that was provided to us, but wanted the presentation and the minutes as part of the investigation. But we'll do a follow-up to check, and this is what I always say, people must understand when they appear before Parliament. It's a legal entity, it's an institution. So if you say something that are to legal you off, you are parenting yourself into that. So we did provide the evidence that they were looking for. But we'll do a follow-up with them in terms of, because what Honourable McKenzie was referring to, at the beginning of our term, we did call SIU because we had almost about 7 at that time investigations under them. I think they've grown since then for the whole portfolio of telecommunication. It wasn't only on post office. But the latest interaction with SIU was when they required evidence from us on certain matters, which we did provide. But I think one of the things for me, which is important that I think you can unpack for me, what are the current costs of running an outlet, which is an SO, a service, is it service application? Yeah. If you can give that cost currently, what are the costs of running that? Because it will help to understand the implications and the level of it. And that's just one thing from my side, so that we are able to connect.
Thank you, Chair. I will start. There's just two other issues that we didn't answer on the previous. In fact, one is a comment, the other one is a response. You asked us on the no work, no pay. And the consequences. We've been very strong on that since November last year, and we really implemented a no work, no pay. There were also all sorts of other practices in the organization to work around that. For instance, people during the strike would report for work, sign the register, and then pull out an SMS that threatens them, and then go back home. And apparently the tendency was that then the person will be paid because they signed the register. So we said it's not a no register, no pay, it's a no work, no pay. So the work is still not done, and therefore we are unable to pay. It's something that's very important for the post office, because we really, during a strike, incur excessive costs against no revenue. This whole design that I was talking about of going through sorting centers, when those sorting centers are not functional, which is where the backlog accumulates, it actually stops the revenue flows into the post office. So even when people do come to work and sit there for the whole day, it's a very difficult situation. We're still talking about it with the CEO. So in the event we have a strike, how do we deal with this discrepancy? Because you then accumulate a huge amount of cash outflow with no cash inflow, and without any cash reserves, it just becomes unmanageable. So it is a challenge, but we are dealing with the no work, no pay, and there has been consequences for people that have actually transgressed, and we have actually done a lot of internal disciplinary hearings as well, and if required, we could provide some of that information. Chair, on your last questions that you asked, you also commented that we pay acting allowances. So I thought before I start getting claims, I should clarify, Chair, that we are unable to pay acting allowances. And this is one of the great sacrifices that are actually going on at the moment, because a lot of the people that are keeping the post office running are running 2-3 positions in some cases. Acting, just like Mr. Matonzi here is a COO, but he's acting as a group CEO. We don't pay him for acting as a group CEO. I just thought, no, they are management, they're not workers. Or not a So they are sacrificing a lot, and I hope that will get recognized at some point in the future, but it really would be a very difficult situation if they were not able to do this for no acting allowance. The questions on IT, well, I didn't go into detail because we haven't signed an agreement with Telkom yet, but we are doing a strategic alliance, so it's not a procurement process that we are doing with Telkom, or that we are looking at. For instance, like I said, we're looking at some of their retail operating out of the post office. If you look at their retail and Telkom, they've got a few retail shops that they've established, most of them in the same malls where their post offices. And we're saying to Telkom,
instead of paying two rentals to a landlord, let's use the network of the post offices. One, you will roll out much more quicker and much more effectively. They provide managed services for hosting, but it will be our equipment, so we're not buying equipment from them. They actually are going to provide us with assistance. So we did actually go, what we found, maybe let me explain the process. What we found is that the post office had gone on a tender, and early last year signed a master service agreement with Telkom out of that particular process. So all we are doing is to actually effect that, but at a level that actually causes both organizations to become a lot more effective rather than what was happening previously. So it's the implementation of that master service agreement that we implemented or that was actually signed after that particular tender process early last year. Thanks.
Thank you, honourable members. I'll firstly talk through the Postbank overdrawn accounts. What transpired was, in November last year, we actually updated our IT system. And it was quite a fundamental change. It wasn't a small change. It was actually like a completely new system. And one of the things that we had to do in terms of implementing it was, there was a checkbox to say, do not allow overdraft when you implement. And this was tested, but because we had certain gaps or deficiencies in our test environment, the change went through without that indicator. So for a limited period, people could actually overdraw beyond their balance. And some people did take advantage of this opportunity, and we initially were overdrawn to the tune of 5.3 million. And with various collection efforts, we've dropped it now to about 4.2, so we've collected about 1.1 of that. But it wasn't supposed to happen. It was an IT glitch because of a new system implementation. I'll then address the next question around the fraud situation about the 10% increase in fraud cases. I need to highlight not all of that is linked to Postbank. A large proportion, actually, in terms of the number of incidents, is linked to mail violations. Also, the way we report the frauds is we don't report it as one incident affecting 30 accounts, because each account is an incident, because each account was separately impacted. In terms of the frauds, about 2.5 million of that related to Postbank. It was primarily a branch manager that accessed customer accounts to steal money. So customers did not actually realize that their accounts had been accessed and the money was stolen. And he had been arrested. So that's the good news on that. And unfortunately, it's always a challenge, not just for post office, but for all banks around monitoring and managing the inflow of people into your organization to prevent fraudsters from entering. And it's typically we find that it's in the rural areas which are most impacted, which is also our poorest customers. So it really isn't great, but I mean we have arrested that individual. Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. And yes, honourable member, just to go back to the training issue. If I may clarify, when you asked the question, it was around DTT, if I remember, around training. Just to clarify again, in respect of the digital transfer migration program, yes, the people have been trained, but as the question was raised even later on, when do you expect that program to start? We are waiting on USASA. So the effectiveness of that training, unfortunately, we'll only know once the program is now actually in place and is rolled out. And yes, we will monitor. We've put in place systems to monitor the effectiveness of that training. In fact, it is part of the SLA that we've signed with USASA, so that there is effectiveness in the training and in the service that is provided. So you will actually have regular updates as to how effective the post office is performing in that program. Thank you.
Chair, if I can also just comment on the USO. Generally speaking, to set up the post office would take us back by about 1.2 million rand to establish the post office. Obviously, it will depend on the location. That plays a very big role. And then annually, you are looking at operational costs of about 652,000 rand per annum.
Chair, I just wanted to emphasize one point here, which has come through the rigorous analysis of our financials that we have been doing, as Dr. Lushabe has alluded to. We have lived for a long time with the wrong perception that USO branches are not profitable. And we have tended to look at USO branches, particularly in rural areas, as a burden to the system. Our analysis recently indicates that in most cases, it's the post offices in metros that are a problem, largely because the cost, the rental cost there, are incredibly huge, and they just wipe out whatever revenue that we make. On the other hand, most of the post offices that we have in townships and semi-rural areas come out of a very low rental base, and we are actually able to make some profits there. So whenever we talk about the financial viability of the post offices, we are now exercising more care in that we're not painting everybody with the same brush, particularly those offices that are in rural areas. Thank you.
Thank you very much for the discussions and engagement. I think, as you said initially, that we are going to try and make sure that we have another follow-up before just the table of the strategy. It's a different type of environment altogether. But just to see the issues that are raised, especially around the turnaround that will be presented by the support before we even go to that process. I know that our program is a bit tight, but we'll look at what is feasible to discuss. It will definitely be at the beginning of the next term. It wouldn't be now or term end of March. It will be somewhere before April, I think. But I think, let me, again, in conclusion, just reiterate that for me, looking at previous engagements with SAP, what I appreciate now is that there's more honesty, there's more openness in terms of the issues, and that helps in engagement. It assists us to see the picture and to understand where you are sitting. So that we are able to look at better ways how to resolve, because it's all our responsibility, whether through oversight or through management. And that's what I think I need to reiterate from the committee's point of view, and that's how you can hear the sentiments from members of committee because of your openness and frankness in engagement, and just laying the issues out in front to say this are the situation, this is the situation, these are the issues, and you can see the engagement level increases to more dealing with substantive issues rather than just trying to, you know, to block, but what is this, you know, trying to find information. But when you lay information in front of the members of the committee, we're able to deliver it more effectively. And I think, let me appreciate that from the side of the chair, from the level that the fairness and the openness of what you have engaged. But again, to look at the turnaround, though you have not delivered your turnaround, but there are certain elements that you are starting to pick up that things are starting to shape up to us a direction, a good direction, and want those emphasized, that we want to see an institution that is more effective, that is more running, that creates that level of credibility. And this is what we said when we engaged with the staff, that everybody has a responsibility to build an organization that can be proud to be known to. It has to be a thing of the past where people, when they talk about post office, they make a mockery of it. And I always look at your motto, we deliver whatever it takes. For me, perhaps I have internalized it to understand what it means. And that's what all members of post office need to understand, that you've got to deliver whatever it takes, whether there's a strike, whether there's financial difficulties, it's whatever it takes. That's what you have committed yourself to. And what is refreshing is to understand that the difficult financial difficulties that are within the South African Post Office have not limped into the Post Bank. And the separation of the institution and the entities helps. Because if that creates some stability and confidence that if the site is still able to be stable, then there's hope that the other side, the other hand, will turn around. So for me, that's refreshing where I'm sitting, to know that level. That's why I emphasize understanding what we mean here. switch on. But for somebody who says, I want to have a savings account in Post Bank, must have that level of confidence that things are not bad at Post Bank, the problems are at Post Office. So you need to start communicating that clearly to the public, because that will help in turning around even the image of Post Office. With those few words, I'm going to release you and have our meeting proceeding with our own issues. Members, we are going to deal with the analysis of SONA. Thank you very much to the delegation. If you want to stay, you're more than welcome, but you are free to be excused. Thank you very much. We'll take 2 minutes of a break. Just come back.
Chair, just quickly to say the administrator did not run away. He was called to speak to Minister Nene, so we are all keeping our prayer heads on. Thank you.